Yeah, it's in my backpack. We'll get it later.
Okay, all right. As long as you've got the map, we'll be fine. Hello and welcome, everyone, to episode 144 of Ribbon of Memes, a podcast where we interrogate films previously described by other idiots lost in the woods as masterpieces. I am Nick, the idiot lost in the woods of this podcast, and I'm joined, as ever, by Roger.
Where's the wood again?
We are discussing 1999's possible masterpiece, The Blair Witch Project, directed by two directors,
Daniel Myrick and Eduardo Sanchez.
Thank you. And this was a phenomena at the time. I mean, I heard this coming from, to put it in the context of my life, I had just qualified as a vet and I was in my first job. And I was so excited to see this film. It was one of those films, the hype rumbled across the Atlantic before the film did. And it was like the scariest film, much as The Exorcist was described before, it was described as the scariest film ever. Were you aware of the hype machine before you watched it, Roger? Have you watched it?
Well, I saw it for the first time quite recently.
Right.
In part because I was aware of the hype and I was pretty sure that nothing was going to live up to it. And also everybody knew who'd seen it said, that was a bit of rubbish, actually.
spoilers. And
now, to be fair, spoilers anyway. But to be fair, we've talked about this before. There have been several films that, if we'd come to them cold, we would probably have said, you know, that was okay. It wasn't great. But because it was talked up, and not necessarily even by the hype machine, but just by people we've known who liked it,
yes.
Who said, you know, this is the best thing ever. And when it isn't the best thing ever to our perceptions, that can be more disappointing, because it's a letdown as well as not being absolutely great. So
I think I would have had a very different opinion of Blair Witch. I was wondering whether I would this time, because this time round I hadn't watched it since 1999, so it's 25 years since I've seen it. Ugh, that's terrifying. I thought, oh, maybe this time I will appreciate it more, because I guess the feeling would be, you know, if you stumbled across this as a small budget indie film, you would think, holy smokes, that's incredible.
Yeah, and we'll come back to talking about the production, but that's more or less what actually happened. They didn't expect it to be a huge thing. They weren't making it with the aim of trying to make it a huge thing. They submitted it to I can't remember, one of the reasonably substantial film festivals, and the people there loved it.
Yes.
And that's where the snowball started.
Yeah.
But in many respects, this is in effect a student film that just happens to have got lucky.
Yeah, a really low budget.
I don't mean that to denigrate it.
No, I
will be denigrating the film later.
well, you can denigrate it on its own merits.
The point is that, you know, this was not a cynical cash in. Let us make a film as cheaply as possible and then hype it to the skies.
That'll be Blair Witch 2016.
This was, I think, more genuinely let us make the film that we can afford to make.
And then
see if anybody likes it, and holy crap, everybody loves it.
It was also in that early period of the internet when, you know, viral marketing was a surprise to it. You know, no one knew how, I mean, no one knows quite how to capture that magic, but to see it suddenly work in that way, I mean, it was quite smart the way they did it, in that they created a website about the Blair Witch, and all the actors used their actual names, and then they were kind of listed as missing on the internet. I mean, it would be harder to pull off nowadays.
Well, that's actually, which we should say, should we do a quick plot summary actually?
Yes, let's do it.
Basically three Are they employed to be film students?
I think three they're people, film anyway. Students. But,
three young
two
people.
Two friends and then a sort of someone who they meet on the way who's going to help them, the cameraman, presumably. But they're students.
But yeah, and are going to make a film about this urban legend slash serial killer story slash whatever.
Yeah, there's elements of witchery, and then there's discussion of a history of child murder and a child serial killer.
Anyway, there is this weirdness that is collectively known as the Blair Witch.
Yes.
And they are going to make a film about it, and they interview some people, and some of them are interesting, and some of them are a bit weird, and some of them are both. And
yes.
And then they go off into the woods to try to find... What are they trying to find?
I think Heather is trying to get some establishing shots of, like, the graveyard or whatever. And we get some of that. We get, like, oh, on this rock, seven people were killed. Here is the graveyard. But they get lost. Which leads to a chorus of everyone in the cinema screaming, follow the creek! There is a point, though, I have to say, there is a point where they're saying they are following the creek. And that seems like a good idea. For some reason, they abandon. Sorry, I've got a bit ahead of myself, but while they're doing that, they camp in the woods a few nights.
Things gradually get creepier.
Things get creepier, they get a bit scared, the map gets deliberately mislaid by, is it Mark? Who throws the map in the creek because he can't read maps, and therefore he feels maps are useless. And then, from that point on, they're sort of going round in circles.
Yeah.
Until the ending. Maybe we'll leave the ending till the end.
Yeah.
But to be honest, it really is the last 5-10 minutes of the film.
Last few seconds really for anything significant.
If you describe it in the three act structure, I suppose, the first act is them interviewing people in the town. And so I guess we should say, if you don't know, this is one of the very, in fact, it's the film that kicked off the found footage craze of the early noughties.
Here is where I want to talk about that, because, I mean, as you have carefully not said, it was not the first found footage film, which it sometimes gets credit for.
Yes.
The one that is often incorrectly regarded as the first found footage film is Cannibal Holocaust, which is 1980.
Yeah, that's not...
Ruggiero Deodati, I think. It's not. But also, the thing he did was list... at least the three principals got them to deliberately live out of the public eye for 6 months and claimed that they were missing.
Yes.
And there was actually... This was convincing enough that there was a criminal investigation kicked off as a result of the rumours that he had started that these people had died on the shoot.
Right, yes.
Which
is successful.
And eventually he had to get them to come out and say, no, I am actually alive.
I'm not dead.
which may well have been part of his plan. I mean...
All publicity is good publicity.
Unless you actually go to prison, which nobody...
Well, but anyway, Gary Glitter may disagree with that. Yeah.
There's also... There's an art house film, The Connection, from 61. Orson Welles did a thing, The Other Side of the World, which is found footage.
Well, you could argue. I mean, to me, this is... it's a bit like his War of the Worlds as well, in a way, isn't it? You know, in fact, to me, this is a direct descendant of kind of epistolary, do you call it? That style of narrative that H.P. Lovecraft beloved and Dracula. Basically, the story is told by artifacts which are in the universe. You know, there's no external camera, there's no nothing. You know, Dracula's told by the letters and the diaries of people who were there. A lot of Lovecraft stories are. H.G. Wells' famous War of the Worlds was, you know, these are all news bulletins from this world. Diegetic Watsonian as opposed to
Doylist,
thank you.
Yeah, the thing that is being claimed in the opening box is that they went to investigate this thing they've never seen again, but this footage was recovered.
Yeah, and that's what found footage means, is we have found this footage. Ooh, look at the story it tells you.
It's interesting because there is an unseen character in all this. Because somebody has edited, clearly, somebody has edited this footage together.
Because there's hours and hours of this stuff.
And it's from two cameras.
And it cuts between the two cameras, so we don't know who's done that. That did actually, realising that, and the time I realised it was when we were cutting between two characters interacting on different camera feeds, someone's got to have edited that together, and that's likely took me out of the found footage idea.
I think the key thing about this, and there are some obvious great virtues of the found footage style, which is, frankly, it's really cheap to make.
Yes.
You don't need a highly polished script. This was largely improvised. We'll come back to that because there is some clever stuff going on here. You don't need to worry about carefully shooting up, setting up a shot composition or doing the lighting or whatever. You don't actually need to hire a cameraman. In fact, in this, the cameras are being held by the three principal cast members. I think there's one exception, one of the interview shots.
And from, that's all from, a budgetary making perspective. From the audience perspective, the advantage is it's very immediately compelling. You know, you're in there. You've seen video like this. You've probably made video like this.
It is intended to feel raw and live and real.
And therefore, anything that is kind of scary or unnatural feels realer.
Yeah.
And that's the idea. And it almost works here, I guess.
I think it's fair to say you feel more positively about this than I do.
Well, my overriding memory of watching it in the cinema in 1999 was motion sickness. And I'd never experienced motion sickness before. But it is really... I know a lot of modern cameras... partially influenced by this sort of thing, trying to get the immediacy of it. A lot of modern cameras sort of move around, but they do it in a way that is not...
They have Steadicam mounts.
Exactly. Here, it really is like some amateur filmmakers.
Also remember the Battlestar Galactica remake, which started in 2002-2003.
Right, yes.
Which was very much handheld cameras and everything.
Although, even
in space where you would think they'd have stabilised camera mounts.
It's professionally done now. I mean, even sometimes it's even digitally done that they just move the image around in a way. But here it's actually done like people waving cameras around and not. It gives you a great sense of immediacy, but it genuinely made me feel sick.
We did talk to a couple of friends about this, and one of them reported falling asleep on first watching. And the other said, and I will insert the clip if we get it, but if we don't, I'll just say, and the other said,
"A load of old bollocks."
that was his review for our episode, yes. I'd like to slightly break it down to the three acts, such as they are. Yep. The first act, where they're in, whatever town it's in, interviewing the people, picking up the stuff from the supermarket and squishing the marshmallows, going, "Ooh, marshmallow." And it's really, I find it quite compelling and I enjoyed it. You're getting to know the characters a bit, and you're getting a bit of history. Unfortunately, having seen the film before, the bit that was relevant just stood out at me. But I think it's quite well done.
The person who actually gives them the useful information feels like what was it, Goodfellas? The one about the was based on the actual gangster's life.
Oh,
story.
Yes, Henry Hill is the gangster in Goodfellas.
Yeah, and remember where in that the FBI agent that he talks to is played by the real FBI agent. And this is a similar thing, but the other way around. You know, this does not look like the same sort of person that everybody else is.
Yes, because they're acting. I agree. So that I found quite compelling, and I was interested again this time. Then the second act, which is, frankly, the long bulk of the film, is the expedition into the woods. And the slow deterioration of the expedition from, hey, this is fun, to, we are actually going to die out here. Mm-hmm. And I think it is well done. I mean, I find it compelling and interesting, even though there's moments when you're just kind of screaming at the screen, no, what are you doing? Do this instead.
Now, the thing that I thought when I as with everybody saying, why don't they follow the stream downhill, was, well, you know, you could actually do that. You could have them following the stream and then say, we have followed the stream and we are back at this same place.
Exactly. That would have been brilliant. And then they would...
I think I know why they didn't, but I think it's because it will be a blatantly supernatural thing.
Right, yeah.
And the things that are blatantly supernatural are meant to be saved till right at the end.
Yes.
Even if then.
I mean, it gets to the point where one of them, Josh, disappears, and then you get this incredibly creepy package delivered. I mean, up until, you know, the creepy things are they hear shouting around them. And it's...
Or they find some sticks tied together.
Yeah, and this is, I suppose, where the found footage almost worked. Because in a traditional movie, that just wouldn't be scary. But you can imagine, wait, if that was me out in the woods and I didn't know where I was and I heard that, yeah, I would be terrified. And it kind of works into bringing you into that. But then it does that same trick, I think, 3 times or 4 times. Yeah. And by the third or fourth time, you're like, right, okay, alright. a little bit. In fact, this is a short film. It's like 70 minutes, I think.
81, I think, yeah.
Right. But it feels long because it feels to me like a lot of the film is them being lost for a day, camping, hearing shouting, being scared, trying again, and then doing it again. And it felt like, oh.
Yeah, so whatever they were trying to do is involved in overnight camp.
Yeah,
They have the tents and things with them, they're expecting to do that.
Yeah.
Okay, I mean, yes, there are places in the States where you have to walk for more than a day to get there.
Yeah.
In rural East Coast Maine, is it?
It's New England, I think. Yeah. And I, you know, that could have been made more. In a way, they say, look, this area isn't that big. We can't be that lost. It goes on and on and on.
They did 8 days of actual filming.
Right.
20 hours of footage came out of that. So what about, a few hours a day.
And they were given, they've got like a package in the morning and then a brief kind of rundown of what was supposed to happen in the day.
Yeah, but they also did one or two early geocache things, because although the characters in the film don't have GPS receivers, the actors did.
Yes.
This is where I think the directors got clever, and this is the thing that doesn't, to me, really come through on the screen, but it's a great idea. They gave them these briefing packages, and they gave some of them individual briefing packages that they weren't supposed to tell the others about, to try to get them in the right frame of mind for that day's filming. I mean, there is a script, but the script has a lot of improvise here.
Yeah.
In fact, Heather Donahue gets a credit as co-screenwriter with the directors.
Oh, because she did so much improvise.
Yeah.
It's... I think it's right. It almost works, but there's just not enough. If that was half the length, it would be
Maybe.
I find the whole kind of collapse compelling. The problem is you start to lose sympathy and interest in the characters, or I did, because
I never really gained it that much. The thing we've talked about a couple of times before, and last time we talked about the Poseidon Adventure, which to my mind does this very well, crudely. I never really had a reason to sympathise with these people other than, well, you know, they're human.
They're young and they're less dark-hearted.
But Heather has a big confession moment.
Yeah.
You know, I have screwed up, I've got us all killed, etc. And that should be an emotionally powerful moment, a big dramatic thing. But it's just dull to me.
I agree with you. By the end of it, or by the end of that act two, I just wanted it to be done at that point. I mean, there are some really... There were some good moments where Mark admits he threw it in the creek, the map in the creek, which I kind of like. There's bits where the deterioration from friendship to shit, we're dead, is good.
Mm.
It takes a long time. Well, it doesn't. The thing is, that happens quite quickly, but then you're left with the shit, we're dead for ages. and the creepy package that she unrolls, and it's got Josh's, I think it's his teeth in there, and maybe something that looks a bit like a tongue or something. It's really hard to tell because it's all this bouncy footage. That's creepy.
Yeah, and 95% building up tension and 5% jump scares is what it felt like to me.
Well, then we get to the final act of the film, which is in a building. There's a house here. We're down to two of them at this point. Josh disappeared. And then it does get kind of explicitly supernatural in the sense that they hear their missing companion, Josh, from upstairs, and then he's downstairs, so it's kind of, he couldn't be in two places at once.
And I suppose this is a signifier of mental strain that they don't appear to notice anything odd about this, because they have previously said, what was it Heather said, that she thought Josh's voice in the woods was a lure.
Yes, yeah.
So they've now forgotten that.
And then they go down to the basement to the big reveal that I'm going to call him Mark. I can't remember his actual name. That Mark is standing in the corner, and we learned earlier in the film, this serial killer. He took them down to the cellar in pairs, and he used to face one of them in the corner so he wouldn't have to look at the second one being murdered. But the big denouement is Heather basically getting hit on the head with something and falling over. It almost works as, oh, he is in the corner. Look, we know what's about to happen. But I think it's so bloody long to get there.
Yeah.
Because your explanation to build up so much, it's hard not to think, is that it? You know, it is scary, but it's not. It just doesn't. Oh, it doesn't land it to me.
A thing that struck me. Another use of the diegetic documents, because this lets you casually admit narrative connection. If you don't feel like writing the script and filming it, you can just jump from here to there and let the audience work out what must have happened in between,
yes.
Which is fine. But that to me, and this may just be a me thing. Frames it in terms of a mystery rather than horror, because it's saying, here is the puzzle.
The
micro puzzle of what happened. There are, in effect, found documents mystery books. A classic example is Sayers and Eustace, The Documents in the Case, which is done entirely in terms of actual documents theoretically existing in the world.
Well, you're much more of a mystery
newspaper
person.
Reports and letters and diaries and things like
that. And there's
that.
A mystery to solve there.
Yeah. And there have been others as well. And there was a whole series of special editions of things where you would get, you know, an actual plane ticket as part of it and things of that sort.
Well, yes.
And that, I think, is a better match for it because, you know, here is this puzzle that you're trying to put together.
Yeah.
Whereas because this is horror in the, I don't want to be unfair to horror here, I'm not a big horror fan, but it seems to me that a lot of horror is about, we don't really care what it is, we just want to survive. And that's the thing that seems to me is going on here. From the point of view of the audience, I mean, we don't care whether it was a witch or a serial killer. It doesn't matter. It's a horrible thing in the woods.
Well, I think that's part of the problem. The film doesn't seem to care, or it's never explained, nor is it even implied or even made to. What it feels like is the whole film is designed to get you to that final image of Mark standing in the corner and you to realise the significance of that.
Mm.
But almost immediately, the fridge logic, or not even fridge logic, kicks in of, well, yeah, but what does that actually mean? What happened? I know you got us there to be, oh no, he's in the corner, she's about to die. But what, is Josh possessed by a witch? Was the other guy? And you can kind of maybe follow it, but it doesn't feel like the film really gives a shit about that. All it wants to do is get you there in that moment so that when you see him in the corner, oh no! So that's where I agree with you. I think horror can be and should be much better than that.
I agree.
But ultimately,
it's an attitude that turns up in a lot of horror of a sort that I don't generally like.
Yeah, and it's a disappointment that ultimately this film turns out to be one of those horrors. I think it could have been better. Well, obviously it could have been better.
Well, the other thing that struck me a lot when I was watching this was, obviously, as you say, this kicked off the found footage horror boom of the early 2000s. And it reminded me a lot of Halloween, in that everybody copied they didn't just copy this, they copied the easy parts of this.
Yeah.
You know, Halloween did not copy the employ the best actress in the world of that age at that point.
Yes.
And so you know, you've got the largely improvised script, the largely handheld cameras, the novice actors turn up in most of these things. But they haven't got the bit where the directors went to a lot of trouble to try to get people in the right frame of mind.
No, that said, I mean, some of the other, I mean, the ones I'm thinking of, Cloverfield, genuinely, maybe we should watch that, it's genuinely quite a good film, I think. And Chronicle was the kind of the superhero version of this, is good. I don't remember it being brilliant, but they're not terrible on their own terms. But that found footage thing seems to have, I mean, it died away a while ago, didn't it?
Well, I mean, we did come back to it with Wreck, which was what 2008 or so. Oh,
yes, Dot Wreck, or I'm going to call it Dot Wreck. I like calling it Dot Wreck. yeah, that was a brief revival of it.
Maybe the tail end of that boom.
That was more internally, yeah, I think you're right, rather than a revival. In a way, that was more internally consistent. Blair Witch might be internally consistent, but we're given so little clues or information.
I did notice the thing that Wreck also did of we can't afford to show you a gruesome special effect here, so we're just going to whip the camera around really quickly. Yeah,
I got very little patience, as we have discussed before. You know, just watching the camera spin around and people screaming in the background. Yeah, maybe it's realistic, but you know what? It is a film, and you could try a bit harder to give us some idea of what was happening.
Yeah,
I haven't got much patience. I mean, ultimately, yeah, it falls. It's very hard to watch it and not think, "Is that it?" And partly, largely, I think that's because of the hype. If you went to this completely, I don't know. I feel like it's hard to know.
Well, that's the thing. Hardly anybody did. And those initial film festival audiences presumably knew very little about it.
Yeah.
But by the time it got into cinemas, the hype had got there first.
Yeah, I mean, you can't really kind of blame the filmmakers for that, but you can judge a film on its own merits, I think. And so we can say, look, this was an indie film, very low budget, and it was overhyped.
Even with all of that, I find it largely without value.
I think ultimately, even allowing for all of that, you know, my touchstone would be, well, so was Primer. I fucking love Primer.
Yeah.
And so, this one, it just doesn't hold together on its own merits. Ultimately, it was released as a film for people to consume and, as it is, it was a brilliant, in a way, yeah, learning what you just said there, I didn't realise they'd been given all this individual, that is a brilliant idea and could have made an incredible film. And to me, I don't want to say it almost is, it makes it sound like it's very nearly a masterpiece. I don't think it is, but...
Well, yeah, I'm not a big fan footage fan, so I don't know whether... I haven't watched The Imitators. Maybe those Imitators did it even worse in terms of... the plausible gradual breakdown of characters or whatever, but you know, it would be nice to see, you know, the characters hiding stuff from each other, for example, because they suddenly get suspicious that somebody or other might already be possessed, or you know, that kind of thing. But that doesn't come through.
The film that works there for me is The Thing, you know, where they are. It doesn't really push the paranoia angle, but it works really well for that. Or most of, you know, 50s atomic horror sci-fi, we've been replaced and people are acting slightly weird. That, you know, that they nailed the paranoia.
People and so on, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I think that's about it. Maybe we've talked too much. It's a really interesting film.
It's a really interesting film to discuss. My goodness, it was not an interesting film to watch.
It's probably the longest 80-minute film we've watched, I feel. I mean, I feel like it felt... I think it feels that way because there's repetition. It's like we're tramping through the woods.
Honestly, apart from the gradual mental decay, which is more or less in stages, you could shuffle a lot of it out of order and it would be much the same.
Yeah, I agree. And I think that's why it feels so long. Each scene is not... it's nice that it dispenses typical narrative structure, but what that means ultimately is each scene is not advancing the plot anymore. It's just more of the same. Mm. And that's why it feels so long. And ultimately, and so in that, I suppose what you're doing then is building up, whoa, it's going to be good at the end. And then when it gets to the end, you're like, okay, well, there we are then. That was a film that I watched.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I don't think I'm very likely to want to watch it again.
No, I agree. I think largely without merit. It seems harsh, but I think it's fair, I'm afraid. I don't think it's without merit what they tried to do.
Yeah, I mean, I would only recommend somebody watch this if they were interested in the technicalities of it and, you know, what were prepared to read a bit about what went on and so on as well.
Yes.
And then watch the film to see what the result was.
I mean, as a footnote, I think the actors greatly regretted using their, particularly Heather Donahue, using their real names because it just became such a thing. And she, you know, she was the real, in a way, the poster child, literally, because she was on the poster with her, kind of crying into a camera saying, I'm scared, I don't know what to, I don't know, I'm scared to fall asleep, I'm scared to, and that just, apparently that image haunted her for years and years and years. And that, honestly, the film's not worth putting...
Remembering Jamie Lee Curtis and not being able to get anything except a Scream Queen role after Halloween.
Yeah, I mean, she did all right for herself in the end, but yes.
But this is just a thing that seems to happen sometimes.
Yeah,
when a film is wildly popular.
And not that that should matter, but the film isn't worth anyone going through that anyway.
Yeah.
Not that that should matter in the main event. Yeah, well, there we are. That is the Blair Witch Project. Did you find it scary at all, Roger?
Honestly, no.
No, me either. And that's, I think that's it's built up as the scare. I mean, I watched The Exorcist after that was hyped as the scariest thing ever because I have no religious beliefs whatsoever. Personally, it didn't do much for me.
Maybe we ought to do that sometime. I mean, I was brought up Catholic.
Well, so. No, we should do that and The Omen together, maybe. I do like The Omen. Yeah. Not so, ultimately, it's supposed to be the scariest film ever. It really didn't scare either of us at all.
Yeah, I mean, possibly we were not in the impressionable teenager target market. But
possibly. But I watched it in 1999 and I just felt sick. So there we go. Good try, but not for us. It was incredibly influential. We'll give it that. I don't even feel inclined to give it half a masterpiece point, though, I'm afraid.
But in closing, I would just like to say, Josh! 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 Josh!